Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public media in your community. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
Governor Ron DeSantis gave his annual State of the State address on Tuesday this week in Tallahassee, opening the state's legislative session. He said he's proud of what he calls the free state of Florida.
While so many around the country have consigned the people's rights to the graveyard, Florida has stood as freedom's vanguard.
But the only statewide elected Democrat says the governor is not fit to serve. Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried says that's because of a recently discovered stockpile of unused COVID tests, as people around the state were waiting in long lines to learn their COVID status. Fried is running for governor. I spoke with her Thursday.
What's your response to the governor saying freedom and openness is the way to handle COVID?
Well, first of all, you know, I sat through his State of the State address and was severely disappointed. He had an opportunity to really bring the people of our state together, that these are times in our society, in our country, where there's so much anger and there's so much divisiveness. And instead of talking about the issues that everyday Floridians are talking about, the cost of rent and their inability to have affordable housing and just to put food on their plates, he's talking about these issues that are once again dividing our state. And my concern has consistently been with this governor, his lack of ability to show up for our state, that he continues to yell at the media, yell at people who don't agree with him, instead of listening to the concerns that you still have 50% of our state, regardless, that are waiting in these lines, that are having family members who are sick, who've lost their jobs, who've lost their lives. And instead of showing compassion and transparency and trying to lead the state with a level head, with giving as much information to the people of our state, he intends to dictate what is happening in our state and has become an authoritarian when it comes to ruling over our state, not just on COVID policies, but basically it's his way or the highway. And I'm sorry, but that is not how you're supposed to govern.
You have called the governor an authoritarian, even tweeted that you think he's like a dictator. What's your response to critics of that statement, that type of rhetoric? They think it goes too far.
Not at all. Growing up in Miami and having, you know, neighbors that were Cubans, growing up with hearing the stories of so many of our Floridians who have left dictatorships and communism and socialist countries and coming here to the state of Florida for capitalism, for open opportunities to succeed. He is doing everything possible to take away power from local governments, taking away people's abilities to protest, making it harder to vote, talking about, you know, banning books. That's what dictators do. Instead of listening and trying to govern with the people, he's trying to govern over the people. And, you know, that, I'm sorry, you know, I'm a student of history, too. I saw the rise of Hitler. I learned of those stories.
Are you comparing DeSantis to Hitler?
In a lot of ways, yes. I have studied Hitler and how he got to power, you know, wanting his own militia and having his own.
There are other states that have one.
Absolutely. But the reason why this governor wants it is different than the other states that have been utilizing it for emergency purposes. This governor is doing it for the sole purposes of power and in doing so to make fear and to instill that, to blame people for what is happening in their lives, blaming certain parts of our society and our culture. And that's exactly what Hitler did to the Jews back, you know, during World War II.
What would you say to those who find this comparison offensive, the whole idea of Godwin's law, that once you compare something to Hitler or the Nazis, you've lost the plot?
Not at all. I mean, look, you know, do I think that we're going to get to this extent of Hitler's power? Of course not. But the rise of his power and what he did to scapegoat certain parts, and especially the Jewish community in Germany, and how he utilized going after the media, going after and scapegoating people and blaming people and putting fear and then taking over the military. That's what this governor is doing. And when, especially going back to all of my, you know, friends that from the Latin American countries who've left here for freedom, that is not what this governor is doing.
What's your appeal to Latin American voters? The Republican Party in this state has made significant inroads in that population.
And that is exactly the point, is that they have had the wool pulled over their eyes about what exactly this radical right party is doing for them, when in reality is it is the Democrats who are standing up for their freedoms, for their rights, for their opportunities to have a success here in our state and in our country. They come here for a better way of life. And instead, you have this rhetoric that is coming from the radical right of our state, especially Governor DeSantis, who is doing things that you'll see that other countries in Latin America have done. You know, this governor has gone away from free market, attacking businesses for trying to make decisions of what they believe is right.
You're talking about businesses not being allowed to know people's COVID status or mandate vaccinations, things like that.
Things like that, too. And he actually went off and went even further a couple of weeks ago and had a press conference where he actually said that he is going to try to eliminate diversity and inclusion training even inside of corporations and inside of businesses. When it is the corporations who have actually been the ones who have stepped up for the last few decades trying to make sure that there is inclusion and diversity inside of the workforce.
Okay, the governor, of course, will face either you or Charlie Crist or another Democrat for reelection. If he is reelected, it's widely expected he will seek the presidency in 2024. He made these statements the other day about the insurrection on January 6th and the ongoing attempt by the January 6th committee to investigate.
I mean, honestly, I'm not going to watch any of it, but you're going to see the D.C. New York media. I mean, this is their Christmas, January 6th, okay? They are going to take this and milk this for anything they could to try to be able to smear anyone who ever supported Donald Trump.
What's your response to the governor's stance on that investigation? Florida has the highest number of suspects who tried to storm the Capitol on January 6th.
I'm disgusted. We all watched. Not only do we watch on January 6th, but we've seen the footage afterwards. We saw individuals storm our Capitol. Never in American history has our Capitol been under siege.
Well, there was the War of 1812, but that wasn't by our own citizens. Yeah.
You know, and the fact is that they were coming in with flags and they were destroying the Capitol and they were trying to actually harm elected officials. We saw individuals being killed, law enforcement officers being attacked and hospitalized. How many law enforcement officers since that day have actually taken their own lives from the PTSD from that day? And to minimize that, but this was an attack on our democracy, attack of everything that the foundation of our country is built on. And to minimize that shows you that he is no longer in touch with the morals and the values of our country.
Now, you have accused Governor DeSantis of playing only to half the state, the half that supports him. If you were elected governor, how would you lead the entire state? And what would be your biggest priorities as governor?
Yeah, that's exactly how I've led as Commissioner of Agriculture. I'm fully aware that the ag community was not with me in 2018. I don't have an extensive agriculture background, but I came in day one and I said, look, I know that you weren't with me, but I am going to be the same person I have been my entire life, and that is an advocate, somebody who is going to be your voice, that there are hard issues that we have had to deal with inside the commissioner's office, everything from water quality to gun permitting to consumer issues. And what did we do? We brought people together. Our economy is not working for majority of our state. There is people all over our state that can't make rent, that can't buy homes, that are losing their jobs, that can't put food on their plates, that the lines at our food banks have grown substantially because of COVID, but even still beforehand. And so we have hard things in front of us. We have buildings that collapse in Miami. And instead of coming together, he divides us. And that's not how I am. My dad is diehard Republican. My mom's a diehard Democrat. I've been brought up to listen to all sides of the conversation and bring people together to solve the solutions of today. Put your ego at the door. That is not where it needs to be in government. People expect your leadership, expect your government to work. And that's what I've done as a commissioner as well, and talking to mayors and county and city commissioners, regardless if they're Democrat or Republican, to hear their concerns on the local level and trying to help them. And that is what I would do as governor.
Nikki Fried, thanks for joining the Florida Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
Even before Governor DeSantis delivered his State of the State address this week, another candidate hoping to replace him in the governor's mansion was criticizing his approach. Charlie Crist was governor as a Republican. He's now running for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination.
Governor DeSantis is failing to listen to you, the people, at all. He's pushing a partisan agenda that is making Floridians more poor, more sick, and more divided than ever before.
And the third Democrat running for governor, State Senator Annette Tadeo, took issue with Governor DeSantis calling Florida a free state.
If we are the most free state in the country, why can't our local school boards be free to decide what is best for our local schools? Why can't small businesses be free to decide what is best, what is the best way to protect their employees and customers?
What do you make of the governor's assessment of Florida as a free state? What do you want lawmakers to focus on during this legislative session happening during this election year? What are the most pressing issues for you and your community? Let's line up the calls now, 305-995-1800, live across the state of Florida now on this Friday afternoon, 305-995-1800. Also tweet us at Florida Roundup on Twitter. We'll take your phone calls and your tweets in a moment. Joining us now is Evan Power, chairman of the Leon County Republican Party. Evan, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
As a county Republican leader, how do you respond to the criticisms of Governor DeSantis's policy priorities that you just heard from his gubernatorial opponents?
Well, I think every day they get a little more and more ridiculous. I think Nikki Fried comparing him to a dictator is outrageous. If you look at real authoritative leaders in our history, they take rights away from people and try to force mandates from the government on those people. What the governor has done to great success is give those freedoms back to the people and get the government out of the way. And that's what's led to a great booming economy here in Florida and a lot of people moving here.
Some would argue, as the state senator Tadeo argued in the soundbite that we played, that the governor has taken away the ability of local governments to make certain decisions during this pandemic, for instance, masks in schools.
Well, I think he did the right thing. They were infringing on people's right to have their kids attend in the way that they thought was the most free and the way for them to be the healthiest and to have the best ability to go to school. And sometimes you have to step in and say, you as a government entity are overstepping your bounds, and we want to restore those freedoms that are protected in the Constitution to you. And I think what is the success is, in Florida, we had in-person learning. Our kids are doing well. And in other places, they're still trying to lock kids out of school and do remote learning. And that's just wrong.
Commissioner Fried also pointed to the governor pushing a bill allowing workers to sue companies if they use critical race theory in employee training. How does that square with conservative principles? The commissioner said that the governor was, quote, going away from free markets.
No, I think at some points in time, we have to understand that if we're going to do business with certain entities, we should ask for them to protect what is the status quo and what is what we value as a state. And that's how you do business with that. I think it gives the businesses, if they want to do business with the state of Florida, then they need to meet certain standards, which is not to try to indoctrinate their employees and try to turn them as woke as humanly possible.
We're speaking with Evan Power. Evan is the chairman of the Leon County Republican Party here on the Florida Roundup. Evan, this week the legislative session got underway. It is an election year. It is a reapportionment year as well. Political boundaries will be redrawn. What are the Republican priorities for this legislative session?
Well, we heard the governor give them out on Tuesday. I think we're looking at a gas tax holiday so that people can not have to pay gas tax for a year, which helps them fight off the inflation that's being given by the Biden administration and lets people keep more of their money. Increase law enforcement pay by up to 25% and give them 5K signing bonuses. We're also going to worry about election integrity. Election integrity is obviously a very important issue. And the idea is that everyone should have a free and fair election. And we should increase the penalties for ballot harvesting and allow an election integrity unit to investigate election fraud. And also, we're going to protect the unborn and the right to life, while also funding adoption and foster care, and protect consumers from big tech, who has kind of overstepped their bounds, and give people the ability to protect their data from being shared and sold by the big tech oligarchs.
Let's talk about some of these issues. In fact, later on in this program, we're going to dig deeper into the abortion bill that is beginning to move in Tallahassee. You mentioned the state gas tax rollback proposal that Governor DeSantis has been talking about. This would be a temporary rollback of the state portion of the gasoline tax, and it would be paid for using federal pandemic relief money that the governor and other Republicans have criticized. So is this a conservative use of these funds?
I think it's probably the most conservative use of these funds you can come up with, because the policies that have been enacted by the federal government of borrowing money and spending money and causing inflation, we can directly offset that by giving it directly back to the consumers so they can spend it better than giving it back to government in the form of taxation.
Does it hurt the future of Florida roads, given that Florida roads infrastructure repairs and building are paid for by gas tax paid by drivers?
Well, as you pointed out, we're going to be able to offset that loss by some of these Biden dollars, because we don't win if we give those dollars back.
Well,
to
be clear,
government.
They're not Biden dollars. These are U.S. American dollars.
They're U.S. taxpayer dollars. But the Biden administration made the policy choice to send them down here. If we give them back, they're just going to give them to California or New York, who will waste them on whatever they're going to waste them on. So by giving it directly back to the consumer, we're helping our economy, and we're helping people fight off that inflationary pressure that they're feeling in their lives.
You also mentioned higher, well, it's not really pay, but signing bonuses for law enforcement officers as well as for public school teachers. Why not just increase salaries as opposed to just one-time signing bonuses?
Well, I think part of the proposal that the governor's put forward is a pay increase for law enforcement, and some people will get up to a 25%. But right now we have a temporary cash situation where we're able to reward people in the form of bonuses. We've also increased teacher pay by over $6,000 over the last 2 years on average. So I think we've given pay, but since we have some temporary dollars, we're going to give them in the form of bonuses to reward people who have been helping out on the front lines during the pandemic.
You also mentioned some of the voting and election initiatives that the governor has talked about, including an investigative kind of law enforcement police force regarding election law. County election supervisors agree there was no fraud in the 2020 election here in Florida. In fact, the governor has talked about a very clean election in 2020. What's the need here for these millions of dollars that the governor wants to spend?
Well, I think as we've evidenced, we've come a long way in elections since 2000 when we had
right.
Well,
but in 2020, the election has been seen as very clean, very efficient, and without issue.
No, we had a gold standard of election, but you have to be on guard for what's happening. There are groups that want to come in here and ballot harvest and want to do harm to our election process. And we always have to be on the cutting edge of that to protect our elections, because our 2020 election was done very well. Some other places might have not been done as well. So we want to make sure we're on the cutting edge of making sure that everyone's vote counts equally and they can have faith in our election process.
Is the governor's agenda the same as the Republican agenda this law writing session?
I think all of us as Republicans kind of agree with the governor. He has his finger on the pulse of the Republican electorate. And I think the legislature sees that and is in line with all of his big proposals. I mean, there will be little disagreements everyone has through how to do certain things. But on the big issues, I think everyone seems to be in agreement and playing from the same playbook.
Evan Power has been our guest, the chairman of the Leon County Republican Party, joining us from Tallahassee. Evan, thanks so much for your time and giving us your perspective. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Line up your phone calls now. We're going to get to them in just a few moments, but get in the queue, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800. We're hearing from Fort Lauderdale, Celebration, Orlando, Vero Beach. We want to hear from you. What do you make of the priorities for lawmakers this legislative session? What are the important issues in your community? 305-995-1800. You can also hit us up on Twitter. Look for us on social media. We are at Florida Roundup. More to come. Stick with us.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about the important issues you'd like state lawmakers to tackle for your community. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup on Twitter.
Lots of calls we heard earlier in the hour from Nikki Freed, the state's Commissioner of Agriculture. and a candidate for governor. We heard from Evan Power of the Leon County GOP, and now we're going to hear from all of you, beginning with Janine in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Janine, thanks for calling the show.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Go ahead.
So the reason I'm calling is because what Annette Tadeo said really resonated with me. I feel very strongly and passionately that municipalities, local municipalities, know what is best for their community, which is essentially their family. So just like a parent should know what's best for their family, I feel like our mayors and city councils should know what is best for their local communities. What's best for Pensacola is not necessarily what's best for Cocoa Beach and is not necessarily what's best for Key West. Each community has their own very unique set of circumstances. And, I mean, my button issue, I guess you would say, is the sunscreen and the cruise ships in Key West. Those people have a very delicate, fragile ecosystem, and it should be for them to decide what type of sunscreen people should be wearing when snorkeling, and not somebody who doesn't live in Key West and doesn't have to deal with the consequences of it.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea of home rule that was brought up earlier in the show, Janine, that's typically been a strong conservative value. But it's certainly one that Republicans in Florida have gone away from in recent years. Thanks for your thoughts, Janine. Wes in Orlando now with us. Hi, Wes. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing great. So what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I was very disappointed with the State of the State speech this week. You know, Governor DeSantis did not even acknowledge the 63,000 Floridians who have died from COVID. You know, this is not a political issue, it's a human issue, and he just absolutely refused to acknowledge it. But then even today, something that should be chilling for all Floridians, yesterday the Supreme Court, the final arbiter for, you know, law and order in this country, decided that the vaccine mandate for healthcare workers should stand and is constitutional. And the governor has now said that he is going to openly defy the United States Supreme Court. You know, no matter how you feel politically, that should be terrifying to every Floridian that we have a governor who is now refusing to follow the orders of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Wes, thanks for your thoughts. Lots of calls coming in from across the state. Let us know what's important to you this Friday here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Patricia on the line from Aventura. Hey, Patricia. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I really want to thank you guys and NPR for, you know, keeping the fight up. I hear this conversation over and over with these Republicans starting, you know, from DeSantis down. And it's just so facetious. I come from Latin America. I come from Venezuela. I've seen this film before. And all these guys are parroting what Trump says, and they're bringing it down to the state level. And it's very scary, like the previous caller said, you know, they don't care about the Constitution and the laws. They just want to do a minority government, white and male and upper class economically, and the rest of the people can go jump in a lake. So I want to thank you all, you know, journalists in this country for a free press. And I call on everybody to support their local newspaper and the local.
Well, and hey, I'm glad you support the free press. But let me ask you, Patricia, you have a perspective as someone coming here from Central America. What are your thoughts about Latino voters in Florida who like the Republican policies in this state?
Yes.
What are the conversations have with those folks?
I come from Venezuela, which is the tip of South America. We're a Caribbean country. But having said I think that the Democratic Party is asleep at the wheel in Florida because the Republicans were very smart to jump on the fear that these Latino immigrants from all these countries that have fallen under dictators, also populists, but from the left, you know, Chavez and the Nicaraguan Ortega. All these people are populists. They just sell lies from left or right. They're the same kind of beast. And the Republican Party was very smart to, you know, draw on their fear of socialism, and they labeled, you know, Biden and the, you know, the Democratic Party as socialist, and that's the way it went, and I think it's going to happen again. I don't see the Democratic Party doing much about it, and it's really terrible. So I, you know, it's a call also for the Democratic Party to do something about this.
Patricia, you know, thanks for your call. Lots of calls and tweets, Tom.
Indeed. Jamie tweeting us at Florida Roundup, legislators should focus on affordable housing all over the state and bring jobs in. Someone tweeting under the handle Tropical Depression writes, here in Orlando, we need more affordable housing. The cost of rent here versus what people make just doesn't line up. Send us your thoughts. What are the big issues in your community you'd like lawmakers to tackle? At Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. In South Florida, Warren is listening in Delray Beach on line 6. Hey, Warren, thanks for listening. You're on the radio.
Thank you for allowing me to participate. I thought that Commissioner Freed was, for the most part, right on. That Mr. Powers, almost from the beginning, when he just negated virtually everything she said, was typical of his party. And I think the previous caller, by the way, was very right on.
You wanted to talk about condominium boards, which has been a big issue in South Florida, but across the state after the Surfside collapse.
And I have tried to get stories about it through my local PBS station, and the head of the news department dismissed the justice issue as a real estate issue, and I'm still waiting for action.
What is it you'd like lawmakers to tackle? There are some condominium bills making their way in Tallahassee.
Plenty. These people who get onto the condominium boards can frame a resident. It's happened to me. They get in the way. They don't obey their own documents. They go against Section 45 of Florida state law, Chapter 718, which limits rules and regulations to health, safety, and ability to enjoy the common property. They try to force house inspections, which are illegal under the law, under the irrevocable right of access. Mm-hmm. They can only enter a unit to access something that needs a repair affecting the rest of the building. And I have a case of a state judge that issued a default order in a case against someone, by the way, very critical of the Bar Association and a pro se. And the order was illegal under state law. I tried to force a house inspection, which is, again, against the irrevocable right of access. And the Bar Association loves this stuff.
Well, Warren, mm-hmm. there's certainly a lot to debate, Melissa, this issue about mm-hmm. Condominium safety. Disclosure and transparency when it comes to home associations is certainly going to come up, and there is a bill that's already been moving that would limit damage to contractors that build below certain building standards, but just one of the many issues here to watch in the weeks ahead during the legislative session. Republican lawmakers in the state are planning to pass legislation this year that would drastically limit access to abortions. It's a move sure to inflame growing tensions nationally over conservative efforts to overturn the Supreme Court decision Roe versus Wade. Now, the bill that's moving already in Tallahassee would enact a ban on abortion in Florida after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That's unless two doctors agree the fetus is suffering from a fatal abnormality or if the mother's life is endangered. There are no exceptions for rape or incest in this legislation. Existing Florida law restricts abortions after 24 weeks. Let's talk about this, and we want to invite you into the conversation as well. We'll take your phone calls in a moment. Line them up now, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup.
State Senator Lori Berman says she'll vote against the abortion bill. Berman, Democrat of Boynton Beach, joins us now here on the Florida Roundup. Senator Berman, good to be with you. So Governor DeSantis has indicated he will sign this bill into law. Do you see it passing the Florida Senate and heading to his desk?
Thank you so much for having me. Unfortunately, the numbers are really difficult for in Florida, and there is a strong possibility that this bill can be passed. But I think that if the people of the state make it known that they don't want to have this bill, that we could have a strong opportunity to get to hopefully, you know, deny passage of the bill, but at the very least, maybe change the bill, make it a little, make some things that are a little better. Overall, it's really a disturbing bill. 10% of people have abortions nationwide after 15 weeks. This bill would limit abortions pretty much after 15 weeks. As you noted, there's no exception for rape or incest. And the people who are in that 10% who have it, their abortions after 15 weeks, their stories and reasons are the absolutely most compelling. So it's important that we all join together, that Floridians let their voices be heard and let it be known that this is not something that the Florida legislature should be spending their time on.
Now, recent surveys on the issue here show a majority of Florida residents, about 56%, support keeping abortion legal in all or most cases. What's your response to the governor's comment? He said new abortion restrictions for Florida, in his words, make a lot of sense.
I mean, I don't believe that the abortion restrictions make any sense. There's no reason why we should be changing from the standard of Roe v. Wade, which is viability, to 15 weeks. There's absolutely no medical reason. We haven't seen any outcry from doctors saying that abortions should be changed to an earlier time period. We haven't seen any outcry from the people of Florida. The only ones who are saying this is the politicians. And I personally, as a politician, don't believe it's my position to be deciding something that is so personal, so private, and should be decided between a woman and her family, not her legislature. And interestingly, in Florida, we have a very strong privacy position, privacy part of our Florida Constitution. Article 1, Section 23 gives people in Florida the right to be let alone and free from government intrusion. And under that constitutional right, I just don't understand how a 15-week ban could even withstand a challenge.
We're speaking with State Senator Lori Berman about a new restrictive abortion law in Florida. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. So, Senator Berman, you and other Democrats in Florida's Senate have filed legislation that would preserve abortion access in this state. As you mentioned, though, the votes aren't there. At the same time, a number of municipalities and counties around Florida have approved measures that would protect abortion access. How would those stand, though, if the legislature overrides any local measures? Earlier in the hour, we were talking about the collapse of home rule in Florida, and how likely would that be when it comes to the abortion issue?
That's a great point, and there has been a true collapse of home rule here in the state of Florida. Thankfully, there is no bill this year overriding any of the abortion issues. So I don't think we will see that issue come to fruition this year. But I, like many of the people, I heard some of your viewers call in, talk about how the government closest to the people is the government best. And I believe that the government closest to the people is the one that should stand. And I vote against almost every single one of the preemption bills that we hear in the Florida legislature.
305-995-1800, Margie, calling in from Tallahassee. Hi, Margie, you're on the Florida Roundup.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm calling because I think it's kind of scary that these legislatures don't see that abortion is a medical issue for the mother or the prospective mother. Doctors liken the size of a 40-week-old fetus to that of a watermelon. But imagine a watermelon coming out of a relatively small orifice. I mean, this is something that doctors also say, that every full-term birth is physically traumatic to the woman, and it takes months, weeks, sometimes years for them to recover from this. And if a woman doesn't want to go through that traumatic experience and has decided that by 24 weeks, that is her right via, you know, our laws already in place. Like, we have HIPAA rights to be left alone when it comes to our medical decision. I think something that can cause, you know, if a woman has decided that she doesn't want something, you know, to cause her to be incontinent or unable to walk.
Margie, and not to cut you off, I do appreciate you calling in, though, and sharing your point of view on this. Senator Berman, you'll certainly be hearing from a lot of constituents out there, particularly women, on both sides of this issue. But let's, before we let you go, point out challenges to Roe v. Wade are moving in Florida, and they have already moved in other states like Texas and Mississippi.
Absolutely. And that's why you see this bill that we have in front of us. There was a Texas-style bill filed in Florida, and I don't think that bill will move at all. But this bill is very much along the same lines of the Mississippi bill with 15 weeks. So we will see what the court does. But as I did note, Florida does have its own constitutional law, which I think is a higher standard than the U.S. Supreme Court. So we will see how that all works out. But I like to agree with the previous speaker. Abortion is health care, and health care is something that should be decided on a personal basis and not by politicians. And as we've heard also today, so many people are concerned about so many things that the Florida legislature needs to do. We need to be doing things about affordable housing. We need to be making sure that our people are safe and our communities are safe. And this is not something
And not what you believe should be the priority. State Senator Lori Berman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Still to come on our program, we'll hear a voice from the other side of the abortion debate from the Florida Family Policy Council. 305-995-1800 to add your voice to the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.
We're back on the Florida Roundup here from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public media in your town. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And right now on the show, we are talking about a new bill moving in Tallahassee. It would put in new limits on abortion in Florida, making abortion illegal after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Get on the line now with your thoughts, 305-995-1800, or tweets at Florida Roundup.
Melissa Woodford joins us now, Communications Director for the Florida Family Policy Council. Melissa, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
As we've mentioned, this proposed law would prohibit abortions in Florida after 15 weeks. Does the Florida Family Policy Council support this legislation?
We do support this legislation. This legislation, as you mentioned, will end late-term abortions in the state of Florida. And what we're optimistic about is that it has support on both the House and Senate sides. And the text of both bills is very similar, meaning that they corresponded with each other. We're very confident that it will pass. And we know that when it does, it will be one of the most robust protections for the lives of the unborn in the state of Florida prior to Roe versus Wade. We also know that we as an organization are very committed to defending the lives of the unborn. We know that adoption is a better option. And when we're talking about the abortion debate, those are sort of the framework. That's the framework that we're looking at when we're wanting to protect these children. And we're also trying to figure out how to put this bill forward. But overall, we're optimistic that this bill will pass. We're excited, and we think that it will do a lot to save more babies' lives in this state.
You said that this bill would ban, in your words, late-term abortions. Florida law restricts abortions after 24 weeks already. So how do you define a late-term abortion?
So we think that the lives of the unborn are to be defended all the time, but this bill...
So any abortion would be considered a late-term abortion?
So in this context, So we're talking about 24 weeks. This is shrinking it down 9 weeks. But we do think that that 15-week life is still, it's developed significantly. We know science has shown that these babies are significantly developed because of ultrasound technology, which has improved drastically over the past 50 years. We know that we want as best as we can get. So yes, we do see this as a very fully developed baby, and we want to protect their lives as far as we possibly can, given the ability we have with the Supreme Court ruling this year. We want to make sure we take the most opportunity we can to allow that baby to have the greatest chance of, have it, the greatest chance of living.
There's a lot of terms used in the debate over abortion limitations, and that's why I want to just get some clarification on that phrase of late-term abortion. It's often been used and is kind of vague. And so Florida law, in your estimation, allows for late-term abortions currently, allowing for the procedure up to 24 weeks after pregnancy?
So I would define a 15-week abortion as a late-term abortion simply because I believe that the baby is made in the image of God, and that is a child that we're trying to protect. So I want to try my very best to protect that baby as early as possible. Ultimately, I would love for all abortions to end, because I believe that babies are made in the image of God, and we are to do our very best to strive to protect them and defend their lives. But we know that we have to work and try to get the best that we can. And we do believe, because, as we mentioned before, the House and the Senate have both negotiated language on this, and because this is a year that seems very optimistic for the pro-life movement in general, and just as Senator Berman had alluded to earlier, we do believe this has a very strong likelihood of passing, and we're confident that it will do great good for the pro-life movement in Florida.
Let me ask you a little bit about the political environment here, Melissa. Previous efforts for more strict abortion rules have failed in past years in mm-hmm. Tallahassee, sometimes getting through the Florida House, but stopping in the Florida Senate. Why do you think this year is different, as this legislative session is likely to come to a close before the U.S. Supreme Court rules on a similar 15-week abortion ban that is in front of the high court from the state of Mississippi?
So we think that the general momentum that we've seen in the pro-life community has been escalating over the past months. We know that that is the case in Florida, but it's also nationwide. You look at the Dobbs case, where we saw so many people come out and show their support for the pro-life movement. I myself was present with our team, John Stenberger and Aaron DiPietro. We were all there, and we saw that a large majority of that crowd was pro-life. But we know that if that Supreme Court decision comes down, there's a strong possibility it will overturn Roe versus Wade. And that has a lot of people excited. A lot of people are thinking that is a possible outcome. And if not that outcome, that we will at least see the 15-week Mississippi bill upheld, granting us permission to here in Florida get that momentum and also have that same type of statute here.
How do you sorry, Melissa, for the interruption, but how do you square that kind of that judicial momentum with public opinion polls that show pretty consistently that a majority of Floridians do not support additional restrictions on abortions?
I would not say the majority of Floridians do not support additional restrictions. I think that it's a very widespread view that people want late-term abortions to end. And I know that several people that I've interacted with, or at least
I think some of that comes down to just what we were talking about, right? Is how does somebody define a late-term abortion? And you have defined a late-term abortion essentially at the end of the first trimester of a pregnancy.
Yes. So I, again, like I said, because I believe that human lives have inherent dignity and worth and value, we cannot just trample that life as something to be disposed of after an arbitrary amount of time and say, okay, at this point it becomes valuable. We would not do that to a toddler. We would not do that to a child one day before it's born. Likewise, we would not do that to a 15-week-old human life. So I think that is a late-term abortion, and that's why I'm advocating that we defend these children's lives. And I do think that many people are excited about prohibiting abortions at this point as well, because it will allow for more children to live.
Melissa, stick with us. Melissa Woodford is the communications director at the Florida Family Policy Council. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Raquel is listening in from St. Augustine. Raquel, thanks for calling. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Thanks for having me. I pose this question, or a comment, I guess, to Melissa.
And I just want to say I appreciate your fervor, if you will. And I think that maybe possibly to protect the lives of children who are already in existence in Florida should be also a huge main priority. Rather than focusing so much on this debate that mostly is politically driven, and also, like you said, the majority of our voters in the state are not behind, I think that maybe we should focus on the kids that are already in the foster care system in our state, the kids that are already not getting adopted in our state. Do we really want to add that kind of pressure to that system? And personally, I hope you're on the list, and I hope all your colleagues and team are on the list, because if there's women in there trying to get an abortion who cannot provide for a child, then get berated and abused by the system, then where are you at? I would like you to step up and maybe take care of the children that are already here. And that's my comment.
Raquel, thanks for listening. Melissa, how would you respond to Raquel's comment, particularly regarding the children who are already in the adoption system in Florida?
Well, first off, Raquel, I want to say that I share your desire to help the children already in existence. I do believe that so many people are looking to adopt, and several of my friends have even gone overseas looking for children to adopt. And that is why I believe if we stress adoption as the better option, many women in the state of Florida will feel that they can deliver these babies to full term, and then people will be able to take care of them. I know, like you're saying, there are so many people who also want to adopt. It's just, actually, there's not very many children to adopt. So I would say, yes, I support that. I also want to stress we do care about the lives of babies once they're already born. Several mothers need help after they've given birth. And there are 200 crisis pregnancy centers in the state of Florida that offer resources such as diapers, food, clothing, and lots of these pregnancy centers are not faith-based. They're simply there to help women who are trying to get their feet back on the ground after they've gone through a difficult season, and there are resources for them. So I fully support adoption. I believe that adoption is incredible, and we should espouse that more as a society. So I fully support that desire of yours, and I agree that that's something we should target.
Melissa, almost out of time, you know, there is a wealth of historical data to show that banning abortion doesn't end abortion. It just makes abortion less safe for women. How is this good health care for women?
So I know that there are sometimes people who bring up the point that women will try to commit abortions on their own. I know that the rise of chemical abortions is very, very significant. But I just
women will seek women will seek out abortion no matter what is my point. And so how does criminalizing the procedure or drastically curtailing it provide adequate, good, modern day health care for women?
Well, again, there are several instances of women who think that they will have to resort to either back alley abortions and things like that. But really, when you look at the percentage of those things that happen on a normal basis, it doesn't happen that often. And also,
well, it certainly did before Roe versus Wade was the law of the land. That is a fact. Women sought out illegal abortions. They sought out back alley abortions. They were willing to endanger themselves to end their pregnancies. Why do you think that would change?
Again, I believe that adoption is always a better option for these women. We can still empower them to be successful and have an incredible life after they've brought these babies into the world. We're not trying to be anti-women. We're trying to be pro-woman and pro-child
at the same time. And we'll have to wrap it up. Thank you, Melissa Woodford, Florida Family Policy Council. And thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup, coming to you from WJCT in Jacksonville and WLRN in Miami. Heather Schatz and Nato Tway are producers. Catherine Hobbs is associate producer.
Director of Radio Operations in Miami and our technical supervisor, Peter Meritz. Engineering help, Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, Josh Torres. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.